नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Text number 11, chapter 11, fourth canto. Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena Bhutavasan Harim Bhavan Aradhyapa Duradhyam Vishnos Tat Paramam Padam Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena Bhutavasam Harimbasam Aradhyapa Durayadhyam Vishnos Tat Paramam Padam Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena Bhutavasam Harim Bhavan Aradhyapa Durarajam Vishnos Tat Paramam Padam. Okay. Sarva Bhuta. In all living entities, Atma upon the Super Soul, Bhavena with meditation, Bhuta of all existence, Dvavasam the abode, Harim Lord Hari, Bhavan you, Aradhya by worshipping, Apa have achieved, Durajam very difficult to propitiate, Vishna of Lord Vishnu, Tat that, Paramam supreme, Padam situation. Okay, Canto 4, Chapter 11, Text 11. Swayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj. Translation. It is very difficult to achieve the spiritual abode of Hari in the Vaikuntha planets, but you are so fortunate that you have already destined to go to that abode by worshipping Him as the supreme abode of all living entities. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The material bodies of all living entities cannot exist unless sheltered by the spirit soul and the super soul. The spirit soul is dependent on the super soul, who is present even within the atom. Therefore, since anything material or spiritual is completely dependent on the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord is referred to here as Bhutavasa. Dhruva Maharaj, as a Kshatriya, could have argued with his grandfather, Manu, when Manu requested him to stop fighting. But even though Dhruva could have argued that as a Kshatriya it was his duty to fight with the enemy, he was informed that since every living entity is a residence of the Supreme Lord, and can be considered a temple of the Lord, the unnecessary killing of any living entity is not permitted. I'll go over the translation. You can repeat. It is very difficult to achieve the supreme abode, the spiritual abode of Hari in the Vaikuntha planets. But you are so fortunate that you are already destined to go to that abode by worshiping Him as the supreme abode of all living entities. Om Agyana Chimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sadrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sabarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. Vanchakalpa Tanubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So it's stated here that it's difficult to achieve the spiritual abode of Hari in the Vaikuntha. Now we're aspiring for the Goloka, Krishna's highest abode, which is the Vaikuntha, but in one sense beyond Vaikuntha. The Vaikuntha ordinarily, the awe and reverence, and everybody is worshiping the Supreme Lord, Narayan or Vishnu, but in Krishna's Goloka, which is where we are headed if we want, if we can stick with Srila Prabhupada and properly worshiping the Supreme Lord, worshiping Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. And that is difficult but also easy for anyone who takes seriously the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. And of course, following regulated principles and engaging in devotional service, taking shelter of the spiritual master and serving the devotees. So Dhruva is a Kshatriya, you know, his duty is to fight the enemy and kill. But Manu is saying he's killing innocent, you know. One yaksha killed his brother, but he's, of course, then they all attacked him, and he was killing so many. We won't normally be faced with killing in this way, and you know, as a kshatriya. But if we offend devotees, then that's practically the same thing. Lord Chaitanya and Jagai and Madai Leela. I put that on Facebook the other day, this part, and got a lot of comments. Seemed like a lot of devotees never heard it, read it. But after Jagai and Madai were relieved and, you know, offered prayers, and Lord Chaitanya turned blackish in color. And he asked, how do I look? And Advaita said, well, you look like Krishna. But he said, I've taken all the sinful reactions of Jagai and Madai, and that's why now I look like black color. But he said, we'll have kirtan, and then that will, I will transfer this sinful reaction, all the sinful reactions of Jagai and Madai. And their sinful reactions were so great that the secretaries of Yamaraj, who were supposed to keep track of sinful activities, were complaining that they couldn't keep up. They were just writing constantly. He said, I will transfer it to all those who criticize devotees. And then they had a big kirtan, and everyone was amazed. And it was a wild kirtan, not just ordinary, one of those wild ones where everybody was bumping into each other and, you know, is totally out of control. And even Jagai and Madai sometimes bumped into Lord Chaitanya. But he didn't care. He was happy. And so we see that those who criticize devotees, they're never happy. They're miserable. Because that's what happens to them. But they'll blame the devotees for that. Criticize the devotee and then suffer for it, but then blame the devotee for their suffering and then criticize more. And some criticize, you know, practically huge groups of devotees and everything. So if we're very careful to, like yesterday was in one sense a very, you know, sobering day and sad for us to, for those of us who knew our godbrother and his Purnachandra Goswami and his disciples, his followers, you know, that we don't no longer have his association. But at the same time, the whole day is concentrated on remembering the glories of the devotees, so that's very nice. And something that we should work on. I know, like, generally whenever someone leaves, many, many people who are close to that person, they feel like, uh-oh, you know, I just had an argument with them the other day, or, you know, I didn't get a chance to thank him enough for this or that. And, you know, we start to appreciate more. So if we can practice to counteract that just by glorifying devotees, that's process anyway. That's a favorite activity of Lord Chaitanya. Because criticizing is just like killing, you know, blaspheming, insulting. In one sense, it's just like killing. In the battle of Kurukshetra, at one point Yudhishthira was wounded very severely, I think, in a fight with Duryodhan. So they took him to the back, to the, you know, the Red Cross tent or whatever they had. And when Arjuna heard that Yudhishthira was injured, he went back to see how he was doing. And Yudhishthira got angry. What are you doing? Why did you leave the fight? You're a coward. You quit fighting. You're not qualified to carry the Gandiva. And Arjuna had a vow that if anyone ever told him that he was not qualified to carry the Gandiva, he would kill that person. So it became quite, you know, a difficult situation. Krishna was there. So Krishna told Arjuna that, you know, you can't kill Yudhishthira, but if you just insult him, now that's the same as killing. So then Arjuna, he insulted Yudhishthira. But then Arjuna felt so bad that he had insulted his brother, his older brother, that he wanted to kill himself. And then Krishna didn't want that either, so he told him, if you just praise yourself, then that's the same as killing yourself. So Arjuna, he glorified himself and bragged about all his different fighting abilities and all his different, you know, conquering, and then the whole thing was settled by Krishna's genius. But then there's lessons for us also, so we should be careful not to insult ourselves or to insult anyone, and not, but to glorify devotees and not to brag and, you know, be proud of our own things, which is borrowed plumes, Prabhupada said. You know, Krishna is really doing everything. We're not really doing anything, so there's no use to be proud of anything we accomplish. Should just be thankful to Krishna that he, you know, lets things happen. Because no matter what endeavor we make, or, you know, sometimes the result doesn't, it may look like a failure, at least the result that we want doesn't come about. Sometimes it might come about much later, we don't know, it might never come about. But it's not a failure if we're really trying to please Krishna. The failure is if we don't try to please Krishna, that's a failure. If we don't try to do anything. Sometimes we think, well, I don't want to try anything because I might fail, and that's a failure. But if we make the endeavor, then the results are up to Krishna. Whether it's some spectacular result, it's Krishna did it, and whether we don't get the result, Krishna did that also. But Krishna enjoys the endeavor. Our Giriraj Swami in the early days of Bombay, the devotees would go into the city to preach. And it's very hard work just getting there. They didn't, in those days we didn't have all the vehicles and people didn't know Hare Krishna. They didn't know ISKCON. So he came back one day and Prabhupada said, how was it today? He said, oh, it was terrible. You know, nobody gave any donation. Nobody would listen. Nobody, you know, sometimes nobody will even let you in the door. And he was, you know, not so happy. Prabhupada said, did you try hard? He said, yes, I tried very hard. Prabhupada said, good. Krishna likes the effort. You got to remember these things. So anyway, Dhruva, we know how Dhruva, in Mayapur also reading about Dhruva a little further back, he just finished chapter 10, the end of chapter 10, where he just finished his tapasya. His tapasya was so great, his determination was so great. But the process that he had given, that he was given by Narada Muni, was very similar, the same thing as we have from Srila Prabhupada. He had a deity, some kind of deity, I'm not sure what it was, but some kind of deity, and he had a mantra. His mantra was Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we have deity worship, we have our mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then, you know, the tapasya that Dhruva did, I guess he was inspired by the Super Soul, you know, because his great determination was so powerful that, you know, he just, even right from the beginning, it was just eating leaves that fell off the trees and stuff. And, you know, then he got into the, you know, finally stopped breathing, and he was so tuned. And Prabhupada was explaining that just shows how one man, you know, can influence the entire universe. So somebody was saying yesterday how they were with Prabhupada, and he said that we want every man in the world. Then he said, not only in the world, we want every man, and well, every human being, every to be in the universe to become Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada did that, actually. He has influenced the whole world because of his determination, his fixed, you know, on the order of his spiritual master and working only for the pleasure of his spiritual master. And so we see that Prabhupada, especially when we read the early struggles in India and first getting the Srimad Bhagavatam printed and, you know, collecting donations, and practically no one was supporting him, getting to America in the beginning, you know, all alone. But he was always in ecstasy. He was always blissful because he knew that he was carrying out the order of his spiritual master. And sometimes he would come back, and we heard when he's staying in the Skindia or Sindia steamship dormitory there, and that Sumati Maharaji, Prabhupada would go out preaching all day in Bombay City, and it wasn't an easy thing. You know, people would give him little donations. One man I met, the Indian, some of the older Indian devotees would know this man, O.P. Nayar. He was a very famous music composer in the cinema practically for many years. All the music in the movies was his. And anyway, he told us, he kind of became a devotee after meeting the Rath Yatra, and it was interesting also. What moved him was a new bhakta. He met many devotees who knew who he was, and they said, you should make music, you should be life member. He didn't like any of that. But then when a new bhakta said, I'm chanting on these beads and I like it, it's so nice and it makes me feel so happy and you should try this, he was impressed. And anyway, he said, Prabhupada, one of his friends brought Prabhupada to his office in the 60s. And, you know, Prabhupada was preaching and he wasn't very interested. And the friend finally said he wants a donation. So he gave 100 rupees, which at that time was something, you know, 100 rupees. And Prabhupada gave him a book. He said, no, I don't need the book. And he gave it back. And then Prabhupada said, no, take the book. And that went on a little bit. And then he didn't want to take the book. Prabhupada said, he gave him back the 100 rupees. Then he realized he better take the book, because he knew enough that it's very inauspicious if the sadhu doesn't take your donation, you know. So that way he got the book, but that was all. And so Prabhupada was dealing with that kind of, you know, environment. So Sumati Maharaji asked him, you know, how was it today? He said, no, today was very hard. But then, and he was looking out the window, seemingly morose, but he's just praying. And then he said, but tomorrow will be better. And he was joyful. So he never was really, you know, in America, he said he would go and check the schedules of the boats going back to India. But he never booked it. Flight or whatever. He didn't go back. Once he got a few followers, he had to make so much endeavor to stay and keep extending the visa and extending the visa. And finally had to go to Canada while somebody worked out getting a residence visa for him, because he wanted to carry out that order of his spiritual master. So he, and then he mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita purport, just the mention of the Krishna consciousness spreading all over the universe. And then he asked, you might wonder how that could happen. But then he said, the same way that in just a few years at that time that he wrote that, he might have been in America almost 10 years. He said, just like that, in just 10 years, this Hare Krishna mantra and this movement has spread all over this planet. So the same way, and nobody can explain how that happened. Prabhupada once said that in the future, the historians will be questioning, how did the Hare Krishnas take over the world without firing a shot? They won't be able to understand. Now, we haven't taken over the world, and I was reading recently, someone asked Prabhupada, in the future will devotees take over the world, you know, and rule the government? Prabhupada said, no, that won't happen. They're too demoniac. But we'll be all over the world and influencing many, many people. And that's happening already. So many things are coming up. You know, vegetarianism and many, many things are coming up as a result of the Sankirtan movement spreading all over the world. And so many people are really taking up Krishna consciousness. We have no idea how many are influenced, so many books have been distributed, and those books are influencing anyone who reads them, even though many of them never met devotees. So you know, we need to get out. We need to be going everywhere, meeting people, letting people see us, you know, being available to help people, to apply Krishna conscious teachings in their lives. And it'll spread all over the universe. How can it spread? Of course, the demigods come here. Prabhupada said that. They come to join this movement, you know, to get the association of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Devotees can sometimes take birth in the higher planets and preach there. You know, there's all kinds of different ways we can understand. Not that we'll have to go by some sort of NASA arrangement to other planets. That'll never happen. But and the demigods can witness what's going on the earth. We can't witness what goes on the higher planets, and nobody can. But they can witness, even sometimes they see the hellish planets. So then their enjoyment is disturbed. They're enjoying on the hellish, on the heavenly planet. Everything is so nice. You know, there's no disturbance. Nobody gets old. Nobody has to suffer birth. They just, I don't know, they somehow come around. They don't have to suffer, you know, childhood diseases and all that. No birth, death, old age, and no old age. They just live very, you know, wonderfully and then finish. But they have to come back. But sometimes they see the hellish planets, and then they get worried, and maybe have to go there. Just like, well, I had an experience one time, and people experience this, they go on their holiday, so they're staying in a five-star hotel, you know, and they have all kinds of servants and a swimming pool and a beach and, you know, people, you know, restaurant with choice of thousands of different things and, you know, whiskey from all over the world, whatever they want they have there. But they turn on the television and hear the news and they get worried. You know, you know, maybe this is going to happen, or my home, you know, there's going to be this or that. And then they can't really enjoy. So even the heavenly planets are like that. But they can also see the Sankirtan movement. They can also, then they get attracted. And if they start chanting Hare Krishna, then it spreads and spreads and spreads. So this is, by just Prabhupada taking that order of his spiritual master like so strongly. And he wants all of us to do that also. That's for anybody can do that. Somebody, you know, we may work and it doesn't make such a seemingly big impact. Somebody else preaches and they create, you know, huge temples and festivals. But Krishna is pleased with everybody's effort. Everybody works and preaches according to their capacity, according to whatever Krishna has given us, ability, but we offer everything to Krishna. Nobody should think I need much more before I can preach. We have everything we need. All we have to do is whatever we know. Srila Prabhupada in 1968, he was with a few disciples there in Los Angeles when the temple was just getting started. And it was the vast puja of his spiritual master. So he had letters from his disciples, you know, talking about how happy they were that they had become devotees, thanking him. So as an offering to his guru, he was reading those letters with the disciples. And then he asked the other devotees there, he said, Nandarani, are you happy? Oh yes, I'm very happy. And then he went around to, you know, there was four or five devotees. Are you happy? And they all, of course, yes, I'm very happy. And Prabhupada said, so I just ask you, tell other people that you're happy. That is your preaching. You don't have to, you know, just tell people, I'm very happy this chanting Hare Krishna. I like this Bhagavad Gita so much. I enjoy reading it, so please, I would like for you to read it also. And people, that's preaching. Share that happiness. One of our old book distributors in Mayapur, he was, some devotees were asking him, you know, how do you distribute books? He said, you just have to be happy. And then, you know, people are attracted. So devotees are happy, and we should be happy, and happy to share and give Krishna consciousness to others, and try to become humble servants of the Lord. Like even Lord Chaitanya, he told us, you know, Trinadapi, first thing you have to be humble, but he also exhibited, whenever I come here and in the crowded time to try to greet the deities, it's quite difficult being a sannyasi. Maybe you can't understand that, because we're trying to greet the deity and, you know, be a little humble and make some prayers, and somebody starts pushing everybody out of the way, you know, get out of the way, sannyasi is coming, you know, and grabbing people, and then I don't want to be part of that offense. And I remember when this temple opened, it was quite chaotic in the greeting the deities. Everybody wanted to get close and see the deities, and there was no women and women, and everybody was pushing and shoving. And so maybe the second day on the morning walk, one of the devotees asked Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, you know, when we're greeting the deities, it's very crowded and the women are pushing to the front, and what should we do? He was just kind of curious, and Prabhupada said, oh, they want to see the deity, so don't worry. And then he told a story from Chaitanya Charitamrita that no one had ever heard before, because the book had not been published. And when Lord Chaitanya was having darshan of Lord Jagannath, and he was standing, you know, behind the Garuda Stambha, and one old woman climbed right up on his head to see the deity. Somehow or other, you know, these old women, how they can... Yeah. When I came in the temple room the first day, when the deities had just opened, I came in the back, and it was completely full. You know, devotees were standing up on these pillars, and it was... And I thought, well, I'm never going to get up there, you know. And then there was one old hunched over, you know, Brijvasi lady, and I got right behind her. And she went through just like, you know, I don't know the names of any famous football players anymore, but she got up here right to the front, like, and I just got right behind her. And she didn't knock anybody out of the way, but somehow she just got through, you know. So much determined to see the deity. So when this woman climbed right on Lord Chaitanya's head, you know, one devotee tried to pull her down and was chastising her. Lord Chaitanya said, no. I wish I had so much enthusiasm to see the deity. So I know that some of these ladies, especially, and these people that are here, the local people, they may have walked like hundreds of miles, you know, to come here to see the deity, and I don't like to push them out of the way, you know, so that I can, because I can come anytime, and so I don't know how other sannyasis feel, but I don't like that. So anyway, that's a nice story that Prabhupada just laughed, you know, that they want to see the deity, so don't worry about it, and that, you know, they have more enthusiasm than us. We should be learned from, you know, these people. Yesterday I was going to get Charnamrita, but same thing, those people just, they're so enthusiastic to get the mercy. But we have a higher mercy, because we can get out and preach. We can go out, you know, and in the early days, somebody, one of the devotees, met one local pujari or something here, and he said, you know, if you can, you know, stick it out in your sadhana, then maybe in your next life you can be born in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, you tell him that if he does nicely here in Vrindavan, maybe in his next life he can be born in the Sankirtan movement. You know. It's a special mercy. It's not this chance to get out and preach the glories of the holy name, you know, and chant publicly anywhere in the world, and distribute the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, to give that to people all over the world. This is a special mercy, and that is a ticket, you know, that is to go to Goloka, to destroy the demoniac nature, not killing people, but and then to attain that, like, you know, during the Dhammadhar month especially, we meditate on the mood of Goloka, you know, that mood of, you know, they don't realize, they don't think about Krishna's, and Krishna doesn't think I'm the Supreme God either, you know. He's happy to be the friend and the child, you know, especially to, you know, and have the devotees just loving him and taking care of him. Mother Yasoda thinks, you know, I have to take care of Krishna, and he can't live if I don't feed him, and his friends chastise him, play with him, climb on his shoulders. You know, he likes that. That's what he really likes. So not that we want to, you know, treat Krishna like that. We worship the deities in a more of a reverent mood. But the Sankirtan, the preaching, that is a very intimate association with the Supreme Lord, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and of course that's also Krishna and Balaram. Prabhupada made this temple so people can understand that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, they're the same. They appeared in Kali Yuga as Gaur Nitai, Nitai Gauranga, to give everybody, you know, to dissipate the darkness. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanyam Nityananda Sahodato Godo Daya Pushpavanto Chitro Samdo Tamonudo. They appeared like the sun and the moon on the horizon of Goda Desh to dissipate the dense darkness of Kali Yuga. Srimad Bhagavatam also appeared right after Krishna left, to just like the sun, to dissipate the dense darkness of the Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada, you know, put most of his energy into this translating of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then publishing of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then distributing of Srimad Bhagavatam. And due to that, then this movement is spreading all over the world. And it's a great portion of his time went for that. Every night, no matter what, no matter where he was, and many hours he spent translating. And then, you know, the rest of his energy was trying to keep the Sankirtan movement going, you know, by visiting temples constantly, traveling constantly, preaching constantly, Srimad Bhagavatam class every day, no matter what. And he wanted us to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. I know there's many, many other devotees out there on the radio, so got to thank them for tuning in. Mayapur, we had 120, I think, something like that, on the internet. We don't know how many are listening on the radio. Everyone should hear Srimad Bhagavatam as much as possible. Attend the class. Prabhupada put great stress on that. One time in Los Angeles, he said, you may think you have no love for Krishna. He said, but you are coming to the class every day. And he said, I never have anything new to say in the class. It's every day same thing, he said. Surrender to Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, Krishna's the Supreme Lord, you know. He said, I don't have anything new or different ever to say, but you're coming every day, so that means you have love for Krishna. He could see, he could appreciate even the slightest little bit of service that anyone would do. He appreciated it. We want to learn that also. It's not just some technique, genuine, to see, you know, when someone, and encourage everyone to do more and more, and encourage ourselves also. But, you know, what we do for others, take care of devotees, you know, be concerned amongst ourselves, you know, Katayantas, Jamam Nityam. Krishna says, you know, the devotees are always talking about me. Bodhayantas, Cha, Parasparam. And then Tushyanti, Cha, Ramanti, Cha. Then they'll be very blissful and very satisfied. We're always talking about Krishna, always Satyatam, Kirtayantamam, always chanting the holy name everywhere. Inside the devotee community, outside, when we go out, and when people come in, if there's, you know, constant chanting and everybody's talking about Krishna, then, you know, people automatically want to join such an ecstatic family where everybody loves each other, everybody cares about each other. That automatically will spread more and more. So this, the main point that comes out later in Manu's preaching is that Dhruva was angry, actually. And anger, he said, is the worst thing. Just jump ahead a little bit. But anger is very, very bad, and it ruins all our attempts to make spiritual progress. So anger comes from lust. And so Krishna says in the very beginning, we have to stop the lust. Lust means I want this for myself, and convert that into love, that I want to do this, you know, for Krishna's pleasure. If we're doing something for the pleasure of the devotees, that's pleasure for Krishna, special pleasure for Krishna, more than trying to, if someone just trying to think I'm a devotee of Krishna, but Krishna is not so impressed, but the devotee of his devotees, and that means every devotee, not only the guru or only the sannyasi, but all devotees. And everyone is a devotee ultimately if we have the highest vision. Every living entity is a devotee. They're just forgetting their devotees. So devotees preach. Devotees try to wake everyone up, spread the holy name, which, you know, Jeev Jago, that will wake everyone up. Very easy. We come to Vrindavan. Prabhupada said we come here to recharge our batteries, spiritual batteries, you know, from preaching, from being out in the dirty old world. You know, we might get a little exhausted, contaminated by the, you know, the atmosphere, physically and mentally. We get, it's a burden. But we come here to get cleaned up, purified, and get recharged. Nowadays, at that time, rechargeable batteries were not such a common thing, but now we all understand fully what is recharging batteries, right? It's our main concern most of the time, right? Where can I plug in my phone? And, you know, where can I plug in my computer? And so many things we have to recharge all the time, or else we're helpless. But the spiritual batteries get recharged by seriously coming to the holy dham and chanting the holy name. You know, join this 24-hour kirtan, or go out on Harinam, you know, or just sit, study, read the Bhagavatam, discuss it with other devotees, glorify devotees, you know, and make plans to get energy, to get strength, to go out. When Balaram, when this temple opened, we have that picture of Prabhupada offering artik to Krishna Balaram. And he was so happy when he turned around, and when I saw him turn around and he looked at the crowd that was full all the way out the door in the back, and like I said, people standing on all the pillars, and he was so happy, his smile was brighter than the sun, and when he threw the water out, you know, then he was just laughing. It was amazing. So the next day on the morning walk, he said, "So now Balaram is here." And he had again that big, big smile. He was so happy. And he said, "So if you're feeling weak, you can pray to Balaram, and he will give you strength." So it takes spiritual strength. Balaram, of course, is most powerful also physically, but that's not the real point. The real point is spiritual strength that we can get from Lord Balaram, from Lord Nityananda, to chant the holy name and distribute the holy name, to be determined, you know, that no matter what, so-called success or so-called failure, you know, so-called health or so-called sickness or whatever, chant the holy name. Happiness or distress, chant the holy name, Bhaktivinoda said. If you are a grihastha or a sannyasi, chant the holy name, right? No matter what. What do we do if there's a birth? You know, we chant the holy name, right? If there's someone dies, what do we do? Chant the holy name. If there's a marriage, chant the holy name. You know, whatever it is, we chant. It doesn't matter. That's our business. Any festival, just chant. And everybody becomes happy. Anyone who hears that kirtan, they become happy. And they get purified. And we get purified. So take it, you know, get strength here. It's special mercy that Prabhupada created all this so that we can come and get the mercy of the Holy Dham. And the main way to get it, of course, we take it with us and distribute. The bell is ringing. This is very pleasing to Prabhupada, actually. They really got it down now, right? They never miss anymore. I haven't ever seen. Because in the early days, there were, for many reasons, the bell, the way it was built, the rope would break, the rope was rubbing somewhere, and the rope would break, and then they couldn't ring the bell, and the chokidar was sleeping, and Prabhupada woke up, it was Harikesh Prabhu, that was his servant at the time, and said, "Did you hear that?" And he said, "No, I didn't hear." He said, "That's because it's not ringing. Go down there and tell them to ring the bell." You know. And Prabhupada so many times noticed that in the middle of the night, no matter when it was, they didn't ring the bell, you know, go make sure they ring the bell. And he was always on the case of the temple president. Finally, they got it rebuilt so the rope didn't break anymore. And now it's always ringing on the hour and on the half hour. And so we know it's time to, I guess it's time to end the class. I don't know, we have any questions? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I was just reading Vyasa Puja, your Vyasa Puja offering a few years ago.
Yeah, 2 years. What happened? The what? Yeah. Well, I remember when I came first time to India in 1975. At that time, I was pretty good at book distribution. There wasn't so much competition either. But So devotees were asking us, how do you do it? And we just said, we read the books and we chant our rounds. Read the books is the most, you know, Prabhupada, if someone was proud that they were distributing books, Prabhupada would say, why don't you read my books? And if someone said, you know, I'm going to read your books 10 hours a day, he'd say, why don't you distribute my books? You know? So it goes together. Everything is association, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. So by associating with devotees who are enthusiastic, you know, we get infected. By associating with devotees who are critical and unhappy, and you know, we also get infected, we become like them. So we have to look for good association, avoid, you know, bad association. You know, even in the material world, you know, my mother was always telling me, oh, you should be friends with so-and-so, he's so nice, you know, he studies so much, and I don't like your friends, and, you know, but I didn't appreciate her advice very much. But, you know, the concept is there. So seek out, you know, association. And, you know, for whatever service it is that we do, we like to associate with devotees who are doing that service and learn more about that service, you know, whatever it is. The pujaris, the cooks, they have their seminars and their conferences, the book distributors. But anywhere in the world, you know, people love to hear the holy name. I heard some devotees, they went to Turkey and they did Harinam in Turkey. And a big crowd came and they got a little worried, you know, maybe there was going to be trouble. And all of a sudden they all started dancing. You know, they all joined in. And that happens everywhere. In Israel, you know, when we mention Israel, people, oh, Israel must be really hard there, you know. Or they think it's just bombs going off all the time, but the Harinam in Israel and gets a better response than we've ever seen anywhere else in the world. So many people come and join in and dance like crazy and chant and, you know, watch it and give donations and, you know, it's an all attractive thing. But hearing and chanting, you know, these and association, in the association of devotees, that's the most important thing. When Srila Prabhupada put so much energy into writing his purports, he said they're his personal ecstasies. And as we read them more and more, we just see how he's constantly mentioning the importance of preaching and sharing and giving this to everybody. Preaching isn't meaning banging people, you know, and it means teaching, it means sharing, you know, just getting out. Letting people know that, you know, this is a really wonderful thing and it's helped me so much. And, you know, people respond, that's all, anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter. They're all souls. We have to understand that everyone is a spirit soul. We have to be careful about, you know, prejudices that we all have. We're all programmed to be prejudiced. I was programmed very heavily by my mother and by living in America. You know, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Right? And I won't say the things I heard about the African Americans that my mother would say, because she came from the part of America that's very prejudiced. And so Krishna sends me to Japan, sends me to Africa, you know. Right? Indian people are all stupid, they're starving, they're all poor, the whole country is just nothing but poverty, and because they believe in reincarnation, and they're just, you know, that's the way we were taught. But then we get interested in those things. Everyone is a spirit soul. Everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. And we can learn that. But to realize it, you know, this knowledge is not learned, realized by just studying. It's realized by the two combination of studying and teaching. Any knowledge. If you just read something, you can remember some percentage is not very high. If you teach that, when you teach something, then you learn it much better. And when we teach Krishna consciousness, when we ask other people to chant the holy name, when we ask other people to read these books, then we realize them much more. That's a simple process. It's like that super glue you get that is two kinds, there's A and B, right? So neither one of them is any good to get, you know, they don't do anything if you just have one of them, right? It's not glue, but if you put them together, then it's epoxy and you can't break it. But you have to put them together. They can't put them together first because it'll become solid right away. So you put these two things together. You hear about Krishna, you read the book, and you do whatever you can to teach it to somebody. Like we heard a lot about our Purnachandra Goswami. He especially focused on teaching Bhagavad Gita to devotees. So devotees could really, you know, get into it, really understand it. And somebody put out a picture on the internet of his Bhagavad Gita, and it was open to two pages, and it had about at least 10 stickers on there with notes. Yeah, how he studied the Bhagavad Gita so intensely. I mean, all the pages were covered with these little stickers of notes referring to other slokas and other things and other shastras. Wow, you know, this is a person who really studied Bhagavad Gita. So he could preach and really enliven devotees like anything, and then they would get, you know, understand the Bhagavad Gita much better, even from very new devotees, and then they would be much enlivened to go out and preach. So others, we want to, you know, we're just going out and sharing, trying to give it to everybody, but just keep hearing with an open mind, relishing it. By reading these books, we're associating with Srila Prabhupada and all the previous acharyas and all the different characters that are appearing on, like Prabhupada says, we thank Narada Munis for so kindly appearing on these pages. You know, we're here, we're associating with Manu, we're associating with Krishna, Arjuna. It's real. It's absolutely the same thing. If we can just be opening our hearts and relishing it, and then it'll just flow automatically. Is that all right? Anyway, that's it. Prabhupada stressed so much to read his books. They're not just for distributing, but they're not just for reading either. They're both. It goes together. Not that we just chant in the temple, we do that. We have our internal kirtans, we have our japa to get strength so we can go out and chant publicly and let the world hear the holy name also, or find some way to broadcast it if we can get it on the radio or whatever, to broadcast the holy name so that more and more people can hear it. And it does not have to be a huge organized festival. That's very wonderful if we can, you know, but Indra Duna Maharaj didn't start out with 400 devotees traveling around Poland. Started out with 2. And he saw that it's a very good place. The next year there was 10 or 15 or something. And it grew and grew, and it developed into, you know, like a very highly sophisticated transcendental circus that attracts thousands of people every day. The first Harinam that I witnessed was the first one that I paid any attention to. The first time it was at a rock festival, and I was more interested in Chuck Berry and a few other bands, but I didn't really notice the devotees too much. But the next time when I saw devotees, It was only one devotee chanting on the street. And he was so blissful that I immediately thought, that's it, that's what I'm looking for, that's what I want, that's, you know. And then later I drove by the same place, and there was another devotee all by himself chanting. That really did it. Then I knew for sure. So it doesn't have to be. Whatever we have, use it for Krishna. Get out, chant the holy name, let as many people as possible hear the holy name, and, you know, make some facility, whatever we can do. It's a constant festival. Give the books, give prasadam, you know, whatever you can do. Find some way to give Krishna to everyone. And then we get empowered, we'll get empowered. Get strength from Balaram, from Lord Nityananda. Take that. All right. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah. Well, if we're feeling materially unhappy, you know, because I don't have this, I'm not getting that, you know, nobody likes me, that kind of stuff, then I'm not getting recognized, you know, then it's because we're not seriously, you know, following the process properly, even though we may be going through the paces. We need that Trinada piece in Ichena and the Nandanam, the Janam, the Sundarim, you know. If we're feeling spiritually morose, you know, that, well, I have to do more service, I'm not doing enough, then that's another thing, another kind of so-called unhappiness. And we should mention also that Krishna is a cowherd boy, and cows are also devotees, and taking care of the cows, and distributing cow products, glorifying the cows is also a very, very important thing. Prabhupada stressed very much. You know, I was more brought up in the Sankirtan book distribution thing, but this is part of our movement. Prabhupada also stressed very much. But a devotee should be happy. Once a devotee asked Prabhupada, what if a devotee thinks that the karmis are more happy than devotees? You know, because you see these karmis with their big smiles and, you know. And, you know, like those parades with the late girls, you know, the queens. They put Vaseline on their teeth, you know, so they can keep that big smile. And they get to spend thousands of dollars like I, you know, to get the fake teeth and stuff. But they're not really happy, you know. They don't know what happiness is. Even if they're materially, they call, my mother used to say, he's hog happy. You know, somebody's just, the hog, you see here, I'm lying in the gutter, right, in the stool. And they had that huge smile on their faces. For them, that's, you know, that's heavenly planets. And so people are like that. They're wallowing in the sewage, but they think it's great, you know, in the sense gratification. But anyway, he said, what if someone thinks that the karmis are more happy than devotees? Prabhupada said, then he's not devotee. Right away, very strong. Because they're not, they can't be, there's no happiness. In the material world, any kind of happiness is dependent on distress. Right? I'm happy because I just had a, you know, I was hungry and I just ate, so now I'm happy, you know. I was tired and I slept, so now I'm happy, you know. Whatever it is, I was suffering and I got relief, now I'm happy. And then, so you have to get some suffering in order to be happy. That's sukhi-dukhi. But devotee's happiness is different. The soul is blissful. So if we're identifying with the soul, then we can always be happy. You know, people ask, how are you? What do they mean? Do they mean your body or your mind? Or the soul, right? Soul is always happy. Body never can really be happy. It's always changing. And the body is always miserable, actually, because it's temporary. It's always needing something, you know. And whatever we do to make our body happy, then there has to be some suffering to come as a result, right? You know, when we eat, then we have to find a way to evacuate. It's troublesome. And, you know, the cities have to build all kinds of sewage and to take care of all that. And we have to pay for it, right? In Japan, we used to get two water bills. We had Weisui and Geisui, up water and down water. You have to pay for both of them. You know, how many times you flush the toilet, you have to pay for that. It's because the city a lot of money to take care of all that stuff. And then nowadays, they recycle it and you drink it later, you know. There's nothing fresh. So anyway, the soul is blissful, and only the soul is blissful. The mind, the body, Bhakti Vinod said, so the mind and the soul are always at odds with each other. You know, because the soul is blissful, but the mind is mad. It's changing all the time. I want this, I need that, I don't want this, I don't like that, why did I get this, and why did he get that, and why don't I have it, and, you know, it's crazy. So if we're identifying with the mind, then we'll never be happy. If we're identifying with the body, we're going to go up and down. But so we have to learn to identify with the soul. But if we're morose or unhappy that we're not doing enough service, or that we need to do more service, or, you know, we have failed to serve, that's a spiritual different. That's a much different, and that's good. That's a different, and it's good. But we shouldn't be too morose and always lamenting and thinking like we should be looking forward and, you know, trying to do something. But a little lamentation is good. It's purifying. We can learn how to lament properly if we read the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Nartam Das Thakur. They teach us completely transcendental lamentation. All right? So chant and be happy. I remember one time I was talking to Indra Prabhu right here in the temple, and I said, Prabhupada said, be chant and be happy. And he kind of went, so if we're not happy, it's a guru aparad. I thought that was quite, you know, he got really serious when he said that. Yeah. Huh? I have been. He said in Japan people are Buddhist. Of course, you know, what is Buddhist? We did a lot of book distribution in what they call the Nomiya. Nomi means drinking and Ya means place. And they have, every town has a place that's simply for drinking. All bars and clubs and restaurants. They're in a good mood when they're drinking, different than other countries. But so these guys, you know, they'd be completely drunk and they offer the book, I am Buddhist. You know, everybody's a Buddhist, but very few people practice or know anything what is Buddhist. They're very materialistic, actually. Like everywhere, they're materialistic. In America, you know, most people say they're Christians, right? But what is their practice, right? So, everywhere, if we can introduce people to chanting, you know, some places it's much harder when that. When Buddhism becomes perverted into materialistic Buddhism, it's very hard to deal with. But, and I just, you know, like we hear many things, and I just heard Prabhupada, I was reading, and he said, well, the perfect thing about that, you know, because there's some Buddhism is very popular now, right? So he was talking about Buddha and how he tricked the people, he cheated people. You know, he said, forget the Vedas, but then he said, follow me. But he was, you know, his teachings was the Veda, at least in activity. He was trying to stop the animal slaughter. So that way he cheated people and got them to quit following the brahmanas, the corrupt brahmanas, and who were saying that the Vedas insist that you must be killing animals. So Prabhupada said, the devotees understand how Buddha cheated the people. He said, but the demons think, I have a good leader who doesn't believe in God. So we get all these people saying they're Buddhist, right? Thinking that there's no God and I can do whatever I want and it doesn't matter, you know. So everywhere in Asia, you know, in Thailand and China, they're supposed to be Buddhist. And but those who really tried to be really Buddhist, when they hear the Bhagavatam, they like it. The sincere ones. Because it completes the whole cycle. You know, not just rules and regulations. Buddhism is full of things you shouldn't do. You know, that's the main thing. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. And nobody knows anymore exactly what Buddha taught because it's been changed so much. So the Buddhist monks in Japan, one of our brahmacharis, for many years he mostly went to the temples and distributed books to the monks. And the monks have a lot of money from doing funerals and things. But he said they're all drunk. They're always drunk. So what kind of Buddhist are they? They all eat meat, right? But I'm Buddhist. I said, Buddha get drunk? Well, I don't know, but I do, you know. Or maybe he did, you know. You hear all these different things. They don't. The Buddhist temples are mostly just a big cemetery, and you know, their main activity is funerals, and they get a lot of money when they keep the ashes. The family will pay them lots of money to, you know, for doing pujas for their ancestors. So the temples are quite wealthy. But, you know, as far as what is Buddhist, everywhere, now it's especially with Japan because they're just completely miserable about their economy and everything. They have no faith in anything, so it's a challenge. But everywhere people love the chanting. And chanting purifies everyone who hears it. Even people who don't hear it purifies the whole planet. So, you know, Harinam Sankirtan is an extremely important thing that needs to be done more and more. Everywhere in the world when we first started, we had nothing to do but Harinam Sankirtan. Devotees did it 6-8 hours a day, and people joined like anything, even though the living conditions were very, very austere, you know, crowded like anything, everybody sharing in a one bathroom. But because of that, so many hours a day of chanting, everybody was so happy, and people joined, and they didn't care. So that needs to be done more and more everywhere. Somehow or other, get the holy name out to the people. All right? So, thank you very much. Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. And the 24-hour kirtan ki jai.